From the studios of their respective lounge rooms, a team of pajama-clad TV tragics ready to slice, dice, and dissect the best and worst of what's on the box. It's TV Binge Box.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dan Bennett. Welcome to TV Binge Box, the podcast where we clap, slap, binge, and rewind our way through the best and worst of what's on the telly each week. Our Binge Box team is standing by. Hello to you, Steve Malk.
Happy birthday, lovely wife.
Yes, happy birthday, lovely wife. And hello to you, Joe Casamento.
Hello and happy birthday, wifey. I feel like she puts up with us, so a very big happy birthday. And I hope you got her a beautiful bunch of flowers, lots of champagne, a stack of chocolate. And I hope she's getting a good present tonight, Malk. No pressure.
Yeah, you're going to get a good present tonight.
Okay, let's move on. Rounding out the pack, it's Mr. Stephen Brooke. How are you, Brookie?
Good, been watching a lot of TV, even been on TV on ABC News Breakfast, and unexpectedly, my cat appeared as well.
Oh, well, there
you go. Very good.
You are a meme waiting to happen.
I'm sure you were great. I'm sure he would have given you a clap.
Right on through that screen. Yeah.
All right, gang, group binge and rewind are up a little bit later, but first, let's kick things off with...
Clap or slap.
Yes, it's time to find out what we've been watching. Brookie, you're up first this week. What have you been checking out?
Okay, I am still with Halifax on Nine. Mm. And Graham Blundell, who's the TV review of The Australian, I hadn't read it as a review before, but he was really perceptive because he summed up my attitude to this show, which is that now in the era of streaming dramas, the audiences expect shows to be very sophisticated and realistic. And every episode of Halifax FP, I find something a bit off with maybe the dialogue's a bit clunky, or there's a plot development where Jane turns up yet again at her stepdaughter's apartment just to have a sort of D&M chat that she's already had two scenes earlier. But then there's a fantastic, unexpected plot twist that redeems the whole thing. So that's where I'm at with Halifax at the moment. And then I watched a whole bunch of first episodes of shows that have been talked about a lot on this podcast. First up was Line of Duty.
Oh, what did you think?
I'm not telling you. I'm reserving my judgment because I want to watch a couple more episodes of this show that Dan Bennett said is the best thing on television.
I know,
ever.
It was a massive call, right?
It was. So I stand by it.
I'm not going to watch all six or seven series. I'm just going to watch a few more episodes to see where we land. But, oh my goodness, what a heart-stopping opening. Also watched The Great, which is on Stan, like The Line of Duty. And
did you love it?
I enjoyed it a lot. I've only seen one episode, but look, it's just the favourite in TV form, isn't it?
Well,
stylistically,
yes and no. Yes and no. I found it much
kookily.
I loved The Great, and I hated The Favourite. So I don't agree with you that it was the same.
Isn't
and I think
it written by the same guy?
Yeah,
written by the same guy.
He's an Aussie.
It started off as a play at the Sydney Theatre Company.
It did,
which kind of amazed me. So I think I will persist with that, Joe. So we can joust
Please
about that.
Please do.
A
the
bit
sets
later.
Are worth it alone.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Then continue my one episode only theme. I watched what appears at the moment to be the hottest drama on television, I May Destroy You, which is British. It's by a young black writer-director called Michaela Cole, and it concerns young people living in the East End of London and a sexual consent rape drama. And I found this one pretty difficult, to be honest. I thought, looking at it, and it started with one of my pet hates, which is a theme about writer's block, which to me I automatically switch off because I find those kind of storylines lazy and boring. Then there are quite a lot of sequences of clubbing in the East End of London, which is great fun if you're doing it, not so fun if you're watching it. And then it reminded me, in a way, it was a response, I thought, to Fleabag, which is that much-loved sort of dark comedy drama that ran for a couple of series by the BBC and then Netflix got on board. but a less sophisticated, less engaging version of it. And it wasn't really until right at the end, the cliffhanger almost, that we sort of learnt that the central character, Arabella, had had a sexual encounter, presumably non-consensual, which almost became the cliffhanger, and then bang, that was the end of the episode. So I didn't feel that it was one for me. I didn't find enough in the storyline or the characters to engage me, and I thought, I'm not back for part two. Has anyone else had a look at I May Destroy You?
I had a little look, and this is not indicative of the show. I don't want to say it is, but I did fall asleep, which seems bizarre considering the controversy around it. But it was about
3 a.m.
I was going to say it was about 2 a.m. in the morning, so I can't say that's a reflection. Will I go back? Yes, absolutely. I did find it quite fascinating, but as I said, I only got halfway into the first episode.
I can't do it. I read the pricey and I just went, nah. Like, it sounds brutal. I don't know that I have the emotional energy for it. I'm sure it's great. I just, personally, I have to
switch
tap out
off
on that
yeah.
one.
So, yeah. 2BA.
I saw up to episode 3. It's really well written and acted. Quite realistic moving forward into eps 2 and 3, and I found that actually a little bit confronting. It was a bit too realistic for me, so I just had to switch off because I found it a bit too hard going. So
is a clap or slap from you, Brookie?
Oh, well, I guess that's a slap from me.
Okay. Thank you, Brookie. Malk, what have you got for us?
That's our first slap in a while, kids.
It is.
That one out.
Yeah.
Look at us loving on everything. I, like over a million of us just in the 5-city metro ratings area, tuned in to watch the Masked Singer finale last night. Extra points for me because I was doing it while I was recording a podcast. I thought it was great, and the fact that they turned that around in 6 days with the technical challenges that they faced, chef's kiss.
It was like, next level great in terms of production. It was really great. Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think they all have made a rod for their own back, showing how good they can do it in such a tight time frame. Network
and
saving
and not
money.
Having people in the same room. They save on flights and accommodation.
Heaps and heaps. I'm actually still leaning in and loving Have You Been Paying Attention? It has switched all of the buttons, and it's helping me get through my Monday nights while I'm missing Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. But the circus is definitely filling that void. They did an incredible episode all about the US Postal Service this week and its role in postal ballots, in delivering and processing and doing all that, and what the current Postmaster General, a massive supporter of Trump, is doing to derail that. Intentionally, it is gobsmacking, friends. Oh my goodness. Loving the block way too sick. As soon as the preview episodes come out, I am watching them. Far too many good ideas for the house that I'm supposedly going to try and build that I now cannot afford. I've lent in hard to Raised by Wolves, the HBO Max high concept sci-fi series on Fox Showcase and Binge, and I've got through all of the preview episodes they gave me, 8 of 10. And wow, like really good wow. I cannot wait to see the last two eps now. So I'm in deep on that. My clap or slap this week is one that I'm sure we'll have some discussion over. The Rise of the Murdoch Dynasty. This is a 3-part BBC documentary series that starts this coming Sunday on the ABC. It is an excellent kind of backgrounder on the Murdochs. Where did Rupert come from? Who are his kids? What's going on with the public knowledge that we kind of get from their inter-family dynamic? Who's in charge of what? Who's in favor? Who's out of favor? How did they get there? Not a mention of Wantell. There's all sorts of craziness that's in it. Of course, the Murdochs were asked and did not participate, but there's some excellent footage picked up from ABC and Channel 7 interview series that included both Rupert and some of the kids. A phenomenal view. If you dig media, if you are in any way interested in the Murdochs, and to be frank, we all probably should be, this is a great series. Have any of you managed to preview it? Because it has aired in the UK, and there are ways and means to see it other than the preview portal that I saw it.
No.
I have watched it.
Brookie?
I've watched all 3 episodes, and I disagree with you.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a once-over lightly... I am quite, you know, I'm intimately familiar with this story because, A, I work for News Corp. for a very long time, but I was also in Britain working for The Guardian when the phone hacking exploded.
And it leans heavily on that, doesn't it?
There is a lot in there about that, which has... It really annoyed me right from the start, actually, for two reasons. It had a sort of plinkety theme tune and then overlaid with home videos of the media tycoon swimming in the pool with his kids, obviously taken from a much earlier era. Remind anyone of a certain HBO drama series.
Hypothetical drama series.
Possibly called Succession, which was a word that got mentioned about 20
17,000 times.
And then the opening line was almost with very serious BBC announcer, Rupert Murdoch is an enigma. I'm sorry, no he's not. On my bookshelf that I'm just looking at, I can see about three biographies of him. This guy has had more media columnists writing kilometres of copy about his every move for decades. So I disagreed with that, and I thought actually it fundamentally both managed to be highly critical of News Corp in a very one-eyed way, but also fall for the News Corp spin machine, because every single thing that happened in British politics and also, to an extent, US politics was ascribed to the power of the Sun newspaper getting Tony Blair elected, getting David Cameron elected, or Fox Media getting Donald Trump elected. Fox News. It was as if there was no other media in either country that had an influence on the public, and it didn't really come to the fundamental grasp that part of the reason why these papers espoused the causes that they did was that they resonated with their readers, the voters. It was actually said Fox News loved Trump because Trump was good for ratings. And I firmly believe that the influence of the Sun was overstated, which News Corp loves because it always says that the Sun, you know,
is the most important paper in the world.
Is the most, and decides elections, you know, forgetting that everybody in Britain backed Blair, forgetting that the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Express, the Daily Mail were all incredibly pro-Brexit. So that, for all those reasons, left me highly unsatisfied.
Interesting. So Brookie didn't like it. Mulk, is it a clap or a slap for you?
Yeah, it's a huge clap for me. And I hear Brookie's criticisms of it. He also was much closer to that whole bubble than I have been. I come at this from the outside. Absolutely, the Succession parallels are not even wafer thin. They are blatant.
Yeah. But it's a good technique, isn't it? Artistically, that kind of really worked. And the music that they have, the big orchestral music, and you think, wow.
The downside
was well
for
put together from that point of view.
Yes. The downside for mine, and I acknowledge it was a BBC series talking about Rupert Murdoch's expression of his power in the UK and into the US, completely almost ignored Australia.
Yeah.
Other than this is where he came from, where I would offer he actually really wields power through his print media empire here.
I thought that was a weird omission, and also barely anything about the massive, powerful BBC as well.
I know.
I think as, you know, is a media monolith of its own. So, look, hopefully that debate has excited some interest in our listeners. And
watch
you can
it,
check it out and tell us where to get off.
Yeah, well, you've made me interested to check it out. So Sunday night I will be there. Thank you very much, Mulk and Brookie. Joe, what's been on your watch list?
Well, I have had such a fantastic TV week. I have watched so many great shows. I'm actually only going to be able to talk about a few of them and have to save some for next week because I just had a great week. I started out, we're doing Harry Potter, so yes, Chamber of Secrets, blah, blah, blah. Then we did a few flicks over the weekend. The Green Mile, which you can do on Amazon Prime, of course, the very powerful film with Michael Clarke Duncan as this massive, beautiful, huggable, lovable giant on death row. We are talking Stephen King. And I had the pleasure of meeting him, actually, and getting a hug from him, can I just say? And he was an amazing man, and he passed all too soon. But I do remember asking him, because that film just jettisoned him to, you know, big superstar fame in one film, really. And I remember saying, you know, how does it feel? It was one of my first interviews. I was very young and green. And I remember him saying, you know, it beats digging ditches for a living. So he just had this perfect sort of take on stardom. It was like he was just a kid in a candy shop. And that is just a really good film. It's 3 hours long, but the kids sat there transfixed. So if you've got kids, it is one that has stood the time capsule and worked. Then we did, so daughter, twin, you know I get the balance here, wanted us to do Midnight Cowboys, the 1969 Oscar-winning film starring Dustin Hoffman and John Voight, basically two losers at the bottom of the sort of totem pole in the American dream scenario. It's gritty. I had never seen it before. It obviously was groundbreaking at the time. My mum still remembers seeing it in a tent, obviously in some hippieville in England. So it apparently was mind-blowing at the time. They'd never seen anything quite like it. And it still does have an impact, whereas some films that were shocking at the time aren't so much now. It really showed poverty, I think, in an era where Hollywood glitz and glamour was everything, so it would have been fresh. The camera's everywhere, and it's really just a striking film, and I think mainly by the performances, but also that idea of dreams being destroyed, and he never gets to Florida, and it's just sad in the end. Anyway, then I moved on. I, of course, did Real Housewives of New York, the finale. Just a quick mention there, this is the first Bravo Housewives reunion episode, and there are many, as you know, because I talk about them every week, which is actually back. Not in, not doing the Zoom. So they're actually
sitting in a room.
They're sitting in the room, but they are socially distanced, so they can't actually get up, and they wear masks to the set, and they can't get up and shake each other and throw things at each other and throw water at each other, or you know, they can't pull each other's, you know, hair out. So a bit disappointing there. And those New York ones, they have had their time. We need new ones to shine. Yeah, definitely over them. Then I did Get Organized, the home edit. I was pointed to this by our bingie Michelle Lucas on our Facebook group page. And this is a fantastic reality show. It's a bit Marie Kondo, you know, her tidying up show meets, I'd say, almost, what was the one with the guys? Queer Eye.
Oh, the one with the guys.
The one with the guys, sorry.
Every television show ever.
So
we all knew you were talking about Queer Eye.
Oh, good. Thank you, Brookie. So this is the one where Joanna Teplin and Clea Shearer, they're owners of the professional home organizing business that is now franchised throughout the US, I believe, come in and absolutely organize your wardrobe or your pantry or your garage, whatever's an absolute mess. In my house, it would be the whole lot, despite COVID.
No, your house is immaculate, Joe.
Oh, thank you, boys. I hit
just
everything.
Apart from the garage.
Oh, the garage is now clean. I'm renting half of it out, but that's another story. Oh. This is COVID bucks. Yes,
nice.
I've given half of it up. Anyway, their method is this color coding, which is amazing because I tried to do my bookshelf, which is in the office. I can't show you on the podcast, clearly, but you would see it if you tune into the BRR show. And I tried to rainbow color code it, and I've done it all wrong. So I've got to take them all off the shelf because they have the perfect.
You've done it all wrong.
They have the perfect rainbow. I should put it on the Facebook group to show you how it goes. It goes red, yellow, green. You've got to do it in order. Anyway, basically, I felt like it's a little bit all for show. It's sort of Instagram worthy. But I don't know.
Of course it is.
I don't know if you actually. They don't give you great tips on how to actually totally reorganize things. I was a little bit disappointed in Rachel Zoe's closet. I don't know if you remember Rachel Zoe. She sort of was the epitome of this sort of movie movement with Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie, that hippie thing. Am I wandering?
Don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you are.
The girls out there. Thank you. You went down the rabbit warren, and so did many of our bingies. Once you start, you cannot stop.
It is not the kind of show that I would watch. But and it's
addictive.
All of them.
Did you? So you watched them do Reese's House. They did Reese Witherspoon.
Well, Reese was my favourite,
Right. And they Gwynnie's a fan. There's so
Khloe Kardashian's garage.
Oh my goodness! I wish they'd done her shoe. It's closet porn at its best, and a glimpse inside celebrities' mess plus ordinary folks' mess. So a great filler, I think. I need these two in my life. Perfect for lockdown. Do that one if you get a chance. And then I'm going to get to my clap or slap.
This is not even your clap or slap. You just raved for 17 minutes about an organisation show.
Sorry.
5 minutes, it. 9 seconds.
A lot of people will understand, Malk. Yes. So
they moving on. Sparking moving joy. On.
It's
moving
like on. You color coding your Lego or something. So I did this. I did this one by surprise, and I was not going to talk about it. But once I watched it, I just had to shuffle everything else down the list. Wow. Rarely does a documentary these days, I think, we watch so many of them and a lot of them are harsh, leave you smiling. And I could not wipe the smile from my face for days when I saw this. And I'll tell you why in a minute. I'm talking about Robin's Wish. It is the documentary which is on iTunes here. It's not released on streaming just yet, but it will be shortly, I believe, about Robin Williams' death in 2014. Who can forget when his suicide shocked the world? And the comic genius behind all those characters we love so much, from the Genie to Mrs. Doubtfire to Good Morning Vietnam. It was sudden. He was only 63, and the conjecture at the time was that he was suffering bipolar, and, you know, it was a lot of speculation about his mental health. Well, this documentary made by his widow, Susan Schneider, is gripping because it completely puts that on its head. And all these people who were working with him at the time, who actually, out of respect for him and her, I imagine, held their tongue, have now come out to talk about the real truth, which was, and the autopsy revealed this, Robin didn't know this and neither did anyone at the time, but he was suffering from an incurable neurological disorder in the Parkinson's Alzheimer's family, but it's called Lewy body dementia, that every doctor he was seeing missed. They had been stumped. They knew he had a shaking hand and had suspected early Parkinson's, but they didn't understand the hallucinations, the insomnia, the paranoia. He would be dangerously acting out his dreams while sleeping, forgetting his lines, stumbling. They were all covering for him, knowing something wasn't right. And he didn't know. And if you can imagine a genius just suddenly not being able to remember, you know, he was so quick that was his thing, right? Mm. Yeah. And I think because he was so quick, and that's what David E. Kelly, who was working on with him in his last TV show, said, was he's such a genius that normal mortals, you might have noticed it in. But because he was so good, he covered it really well. Mm. Anyway, it's a deep dive into the actual disease. And it left me smiling because I had imagined his death was quite lonely. And when you think of death by suicide, you do think in that way. And he was in this beautiful bubble. He lived a beautiful life in that last year. He had beautiful friends, beautiful neighbours, a beautiful wife. He was very loved, and his last conversations were really beautiful. So it will put your mind at ease that this man who gave us so much laughter, really, you know, had a, even though his descent into this maddening disease is awful, it's heartbreakingly beautiful, basically, and a perfect love letter to this man. I highly recommend it. Get it on iTunes. So there you are. Sorry, Brookie.
Beautiful.
Take a deep sip of water.
That one's gone to the top of my list now. Mm. Thank you, Joe.
Mm.
All right. I want to start off by giving a big shout out this week to the team at Studio 10. Last week they said farewell to some of their presenters in the old format, and this week they've introduced Tristan McManus as co-host and unveiled their new look show. Lots of people were ready to gleefully jump on the hate train on day one. Like all things, I think it's really important to give stuff time to settle. The show was already more relaxed on day two, and I'm personally loving the new tone of the show. It's made me want to start watching more regularly again, and I haven't been a viewer for a long time.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So the new vibe is very welcome to me. You'll never be able to please everyone. That's the only certainty in TV.
Sure.
But shows need to evolve and change, and I'm firmly in the fan camp of the new iteration, so I hope everyone continues to give it a go. You can, of course, catch Studio 10 every weekday morning from 8 a.m. on Channel 10.
Well, Sarah is just the best talent on TV. She really is fantastic. Yeah. So
pretty amazing.
Yeah. Last week I spoke about new trash, Baywatch. Well, this week I've been all about new old trash. Season 21 of Geordie Shore is playing on MTV on Foxtel at the moment. It's so bad, it's brilliant.
I love it, Dan.
There are new faces, but the premise is the same. A bunch of nubiles from Newcastle in the UK living together, getting drunk, cooking up, fighting, getting naked, and just generally being hot messes. And I'm totally here for all of it. Catch up on Foxtel On Demand if you're up for a bit of light relief.
Are they in Newcastle? Because it seemed to start off in Newcastle and then it travelled around the world. And they had an episode.
Occasionally they travel, but no, they're in Newcastle this season.
Okay.
Yeah. To drama now, and EastEnders is finally back on UK TV after their coronavirus hiatus. I always love spending time with the peeps in Albert Square, so if you're a fan, get involved. They've worked the pandemic into the storylines very effectively.
Great.
So, yeah.
Good idea.
EastEnders is great at doing that.
Yeah, very, very clever. The show's on fire, so it's great to have it back. Still in UK drama land, the second season of The Split premiered on the ABC this past Saturday night.
It did.
For anyone who missed season one, it's streaming on iView if you want to catch up. This is a family relationship drama about the Defoe family, who almost all work in family and divorce law. It features the superb Nicola Walker as Hannah and a wonderful ensemble of performers playing her mother, sister, husband, kids. It's all about relationships, infidelities, flaws, foibles, and family dynamics. It's a big, messy family drama, and I love it. So well written, so well performed. I find the characters really engaging, flawed though they are. I highly recommend giving this one a go if character-based drama tickles your fancy. A new episode of season two airs each Saturday night on the ABC, or the entire season can be binged on iView if you don't want to wait. This is a big favourite of mine, so I'm thrilled it's back. That's The Split. And finally, this week, on Sunday night, we were treated to the first instalment of the all-new Monty, Guys and Gals on Channel 7.
Oh, I love this.
This is the series that started a few years ago with male celebs learning to dance and strip off to raise awareness even for prostate testing and prostate cancer. There have been a few iterations since with different celebs, including a ladies' night version last year. And this time around, the guys and gals are together with the help of Shane Jacobson, Georgie Parker, and their dance boss, Todd McKenney. We're following celebs like Samuel Johnson, Wayne Carey, Sam Frost, Paddy Newton, and a stack of others as they dare to bear for a good cause. There are three episodes this time around, so the format has evolved. There's a big full Monty bus that ferries the celebs around the country as they learn the routine and spread the awareness message. I have to tell you, I was really pleasantly surprised by this on Sunday night. I'd sort of half-heartedly tuned in to the previous seasons, but I found this evolved format to be a real joy to watch. There was such a lovely, infectious spirit from them all, and I just came away from it with a really happy heart, which is sort of much needed at the moment, I think.
Dan, I'm going to concur with you. I loved it, and I thought it was Australian. You know, sometimes we cringe about, you know, Australian drama sometimes or whatever, and I just felt it was perfectly Australian in a perfect way, like a very lovable Shane Jacobson, Todd McKenney, Samuel. It was just great. I agree.
Yeah, it just made me really happy. Yeah. I mean, yes, it could have been shorter, but having said that, I actually didn't find it a punish to get through it all. There were, you know, there was some extraneous material, but I even found the extraneous material still fun to watch. Mm. So it was all good with me.
All right.
I haven't watched it. Don't want to lower the tone in any way, but I just want to ask the question I feel will be on everyone's lips. Do they totally get in the nut or not?
Oh, you haven't seen it before.
The performance is in Ep 3. Yeah.
Yes. Well, generally,
point of order, friends.
Usually see
the boys go next week, and the girls are episode 3.
Ah, okay.
The ladies are pants on.
Yes.
The boys are butt naked.
There you go.
But you have to be in the actual audience to get the full
to get the front full on.
To get the full Monty.
To get the full Monty.
And it was filmed 12 months ago, so you've missed your opportunity.
Asking for a friend.
I'm going to grinch it up and say, I get the love, Dan. I just am underwhelmed. It's awesome that there's the camaraderie. It's awesome that they find support because they do overcome some very personal kind of fears and things that are confronting. And look, we all benefit in seeing people who we might hold up as stars face their fears. That's awesome. I'm with that. I think the underlying premise, and I appreciate it, sort of a sideline bit of fun, you know, let's get our kid off for cancer and all that sort of thing. I could deal with the first episode, great. The rest of it is like, nah. But, you know, your version may vary.
Yeah. Well, Joe and I are on board. I'll be looking forward to catching episodes 2 and 3 playing out over the next two Sunday nights on Channel 7. Of course, you can catch up on 7+. That is the all-new Monty, Guys and Gals, and it gets a clap from me. So that's what we've been watching this week. What has taken your fancy, listeners? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. We're at @TV_BingeBox on Twitter or TV Binge Box Podcast Gang on Facebook. What's been happening on the page this week, Malk?
Well, there's been some usurping take place, Dan.
Who's usurping?
Kathy Mayer has found a link to classic Australian TV soap themes played on the piano.
Ooh. Oh, yes.
And
oh,
indeed share it. So yeah. Let me say, friends, the tea has been spilled. The shade has been cast. Joe and Brookie, it's time for y'all to step up.
But hold on. Yes. The pianist was the BBC Russia correspondent.
I don't want excuses. This is just more reason for you guys to be doing some playing.
Well, that was
That's
next
all
level.
I can see.
It was really good.
Yeah. And look, the person that plays is very talented. There's no question. Sandra Sears isn't still quite sure if she should push on with the rest of Succession. And there was lots of encouragement within the comments, not least of which from myself, Dan and Joe, telling her to do so, like unequivocally to do so. So Sandra,
especially because I was with her. I changed mid-season. Yes.
You did change.
I did.
Podcast gang regular Michelle Lucas did encourage us to get organised, as Joe said. And knock yourselves out, kids, but there's lots of people that were very keen on it. And that is awesome. I stick to my favourite saying about this. Like, all TV isn't meant for everybody. So if you find the thing that you love, watch it and love it. Love it hard. Because the people that make it will love that you love it. And I will have to report, look, somewhat controversially, the most engaged, watched, listened to, read, talked about post this week in the Facebook group was from our very own Joe Casamento.
Oh, which one?
Letting us know about the fate of Denise Richards.
Oh, hello.
The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Of course.
So many people. What is this all about? Click. So I don't know if this is our bellwether show or what's going on.
Well, it's like, are you team Denise or not? You know, that's really where it's at.
Very controversial.
Very controversial.
Yeah.
I'm firmly in the Denise camp. Many of our bingies are not.
Mm. I'm shooketh by the news of the All right. Thank you, Mark.
So much shaking. That's the latest.
That is the latest. A stack more great TV chat coming your way right after this. Ben, Rob
and Robbo. Media executive Rob McKnight.
Something brand new is coming to your social media feed.
Big Brother winner Ben Norris.
This is something bold and informative with a side of humour.
And journalist David Robbo Robinson.
It's truly going to be something different.
The Ben Robin Robbo Show starts April 20. Go to tvblackbox.com.au/BRR for more information. It's the Ben Robin Robbo, Ben Robin
Robbo, Ben Robin Robbo Show. Make sure you tune in to see Ben, Rob and Robbo doing their thing every Monday through Thursday from 1 p.m. on the TV Black Box social feeds and over at Ticker TV. Time for us to keep this chain chugging along, something like that. Train chugging along, even. It's time for
Group Binge.
Brookie, something a bit different for Group Binge this week.
Yes, this week we're looking at a documentary. It's one episode. It was on the ABC, so it's available now on iView. It's the story of Kathy Freeman at the Sydney 2000 Olympics, and fittingly, 20 years ago today, as we record this, on the 15th of September, was the famous opening ceremony where she lit the cauldron in a stunning television moment that went around Australia and the world. And just a couple of, about a week before her famous 400 metre triumph, and to get everyone in the mood, I have come prepared with something to put on.
Oh, Brookie.
Sydney 2000.
Were you a volunteer?
I was not a volunteer, but I got some tickets to some of the swimming events, and then I knew a whole bunch of colleagues who were in the media village. So I got a bit drunk one night with them and crashed in one of the journo's rooms with the proviso. They had these massive Ken Doan designed doonas.
Yes.
And it was like, Brookie, if you smuggle the doona out as a souvenir, then we are up to pay $400 for the bond or something or other.
Whoa.
So you did hilarious.
I didn't dare do it. But watching this documentary, first of all, the overwhelming reaction I think I had to it was Kathy Freeman. And I feel like I've missed her. She's retired from public life. She's, you know, raising her daughter. She was a much loved Australian, an important Australian who disappeared from public view Jo, were you reminded of just how big a presence she was in the late 90s and in that year 2000? Because the show seemed to be flooded with nostalgia for that era.
Mm.
Did it take you back?
Well, it's interesting you asked me that, Brookie, because I actually did interview her. I did the first interview, or one of the only interviews she's ever done, after she's had her daughter, Rubster, she calls her. And I mean, as you know, having done lots of celebrities over the years, I have interviewed many amazing, well, so-called amazing people. And often, as we've talked about on this podcast, they kind of under-deliver in real life and you get a little bit disappointed. Many of them match up to it. But, you know, lots of them, Tom Cruise, Angelina, Will Smith, who does live up to the hype, by the way, Robbie Williams, blah, blah, blah. I can honestly say when anyone has ever asked me who is the most amazing person you've interviewed, I have to say Kathy every time. And I tell you why, because she is such a contradiction. She clearly has this amazing, innate, I've never seen it before, sense of self. It's a really weird thing to say, but she's has this inner confidence. And usually confident people act confidently, so they're all show and whatever. But she's got this inner strength that is so powerful. It's potent. You sit next to it and you can feel it. It's bloody awe-inspiring. But at the same time, she's a giggly, you know, little schoolgirl who's very shy almost. So to answer your question,
the documentary captured that?
Yes, because I think she was quite shy. It's the first time she's probably analysed the race. But just to answer your first question, Brookie, I had lived with that. So I have shown my kids that race, that race we saw
400 meters,
on YouTube several times to inspire them to talk about this moment in time. So she hadn't dropped off my radar, but I think that is her. She is not someone that, unless she's got something to do, a job to do, and if you want someone to do a job, she's your girl, because I can't think of anyone who has had more pressure on those shoulders than her in that moment. Even lighting the torch, I would have stuffed that up and tripped over. But she had that whole nation's, you know, hopes on her shoulders, and she delivered. But she is not someone that would want to hog the limelight for anything that she doesn't believe in. And she does have a charity, and that's the only time she comes out to speak, and that's why she spoke to me. But she's an incredible person, as we know, and I'm sure you're going to ask me later what I thought about how the documentary went, so I won't keep talking now. But I had been very aware of her presence because of
Did the documentary take you back to that era? Because a lot of things have changed, and I just got this feeling that we've lost a little bit because she's not very prominent anymore.
I thought that Kathy Freeman did the perfect thing that sports people should do. Once they retire, they retire and go on with their life. You know, we don't need to hear from her. Like, get a job in the media, fine, but work hard and do that. She just went, I'm happy to go and do this. So she did. Like, phenomenal. It absolutely took me back, Brookie.
Wasn't it amazing when she ran at the Commonwealth Games and there was, you know, she took out the Australian flag and the Aboriginal flag to massive controversy?
Yeah, thanks, Arthur Tunstall.
That was unbelievable.
That was astonishing for, you know, this day and age, 20 years on.
Yeah.
I think that would even be a thing. It was a huge thing.
And I think as much as anything, it was that moment at the Commonwealth Games that helped us as a nation take a step forward towards our Indigenous peoples and say, you know what, we actually do recognise who you are, how you fit into this. We've still got a way to go, but that it was a step. That we recognise that it's okay. Some people still hold views, it's not. But I thought it was a phenomenal thing to hold both flags as a true recognition of who she is and that Australia is her country in all senses of the word. Her race was phenomenal. I remember distinctly, not just watching it, but because I was driving, actually, Michelle, my lovely wife, and I were courting at the time. I was driving down to visit her in Armidale as the opening ceremony was playing, and I'm hearing it called on Triple J by Roy and HG. And insane, right? It was so fun. I can only imagine what it was like being in Sydney, but I thought it was a marvellous reminder of a time when we as a nation were possibly at our most hopeful.
Yeah, the best games ever. Dan, interestingly, Freeman was interviewed for the documentary and we saw her, but we did not see her being interviewed. It was a very deliberate technique that they kept secret. It's been done in quite a few documentaries in the past. Do you think that was a good idea?
I do. It gave it a point of difference from stuff that has been done before, but we're very used to seeing the hero interview, and it always looks the same. They're sort of sitting either
the Jordan one, right?
Yeah, to the left or right of camera and looking just off camera, talking to the interviewer, and I just feel like we've seen that pattern a million times. I thought it was really refreshing the way that they did this with her voice, her interview, you know, over overlay footage. Look, it was such a great documentary, and the feeling that I came away with was I was reminded of the feeling, Mulk just sort of alluded to it there, of being in Sydney at that time. It was a really peculiar time because you'd sort of walk outside your door and I don't know if it was just me or just the people that were... It felt different in Sydney. People were nicer to each other. There was a buzz in the air. And I was sort of transported back to that time, that several weeks in 2000 during the Olympics. And seeing those moments...
Absolutely right about the buzz. Mm. Yes, and it seemed like a 24/7 city and people were out.
Yeah.
And there were international visitors and there was a joy in the air.
Yeah, and she was at the heart of the two biggest moments. We were all wondering who was going to light the cauldron.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be Kathy. And that's one of, you know, the most beautiful images I've ever seen, that the water falling behind her as she lights that cauldron. Mm. And then, of course, as Joe said, to talk about pressure, everyone... in the country was, I mean, talk about the race that stops a nation. The Melbourne Cup.
They were a 400 metres coach at that point, weren't they? Like, everyone's an expert.
But literally, I remember vividly so gracefully watching the race. Yep. And it was just, I think it changed Australian sport, that race. It changed the future of discussions around Indigenous Australians and sort of really catapulted that into the forefront of discussion
and so important.
Do you think the program did a good job of knitting together both those themes?
I personally absolutely did.
I hated the way they did the race. I'm sorry.
Really?
Yeah, hated it every second of it. It really upset me. It really annoyed me. I wanted to shake the TV.
In
and everyone
way?
I was with in the room was, look, I think the dancer was beautiful and I understand the relevance and she's from the Bangarra Dance Theatre and she's a beautiful dancer, don't get me wrong. I hated the way they interspersed. I didn't mind for the rest of the doco, her story with it, that made sense to me. But to ruin that perfect race that is spine-tingling in itself. You don't need to zhuzh it up. Why put some bloody glitter on something that's perfect? You get the essence by watching the race.
No, that's known as season two in the television industry, thanks.
It was horrible.
A very good point.
Like, stop.
For those who haven't seen the documentary, they have the Bangarra Dance Company of Indigenous dancers who spread throughout the documentary.
And that was beautiful, fine.
Tonal moments, but they did chop
the race.
Segments of that race and cut to the Bangarra Dance Company.
Five
do
times.
Do people think that was a triumph or a distraction? My own personal view is that it was overused. And the worst moment for it was absolutely during that race. So I'm with you, Joe, for that. Boys, what did you think?
It didn't bother me at all.
Right.
Mulk.
I can understand that people would get upset about it, given that it's about the race. So show the race untouched as the ultimate moment of the doco, because that's everything that we're
moving
towards.
Yeah.
Because I saw it as a broader thing, I wasn't there just for the race. The conversation about the build-up, how the whole thing with Mary Jo Parekh, the conversation with Kathy Freeman, man, and the way that she spoke to the media at some of the press conferences and stuff, amazing. So for me, it was a bigger story. To see the race pause and something else happen didn't bother me. I thought it just kind of played through the whole thing perfectly.
It lost momentum,
Agree to disagree on that.
Sure.
We live in the era of big documentaries. They've had a renaissance, and I do think we have to thank the streaming services for that. There have been a few that have been on everyone's lips this year. Mm. We've talked about The Last Dance. There have been blockbuster hits. Jeffrey Epstein, Filthy Rich, Athlete A. This was a 1-hour documentary, and it seemed small in comparison to some of those programs, even though I think the subject matter was a very big one. So do you think that 1 hour of Freeman was enough?
I think it was. I think it told her story, and I think stretching it out would have just made it feel a bit bloated. I think we got everything that the story was about. It was tight. It was succinct. I thought
it was a massive moment in our history, and we have had longer episodes of Plate of Origin.
Yeah, it doesn't make it the right thing. We've complained about it when we've had longer episodes of Plate of Origin.
Malk, what do you think?
Amazing. I think it would have been far too indulgent to go for much longer. Could have been a 90-minute special, but that's it. I mean, it's ultimately, it was all about a 49-second run. And they delivered a great sort of story on that. However, to go more would have been all about Indigenous identity politics, us as a nation, all of that sort of stuff.
Okay, well, maybe not just specifically on that, but I wanted more about the Sydney 2000 Olympics.
Oh, there's a series in that. Yeah, there's no question.
That's a separate... Yeah. And we, you know, whether it be a drama or a documentary series with Thorpe and our other, you know, the hockey ruse, our triumphs and tribulations and tragedies, I felt that, you know, I would have sat through if Channel 7 tonight had decided to screen the opening ceremony once again in the same time slot. I would have quite happily watched that. And
you know,
I
just, it's on their website.
Yeah, but I feel that it could have been on the main channel. I just feel that we as a media industry have undercooked this one a bit.
There's a really excellent long-form article. I'm going to say it's on Rolling Stone, but I don't think it is. Interviewing Roy and HG about The Dream, their TV show that ostensibly hijacked television during the Sydney Olympics, all focused around Fatso the Big-Ass Wombat getting a replacement statue at Olympic Park. That is a documentary I'd love to see about Roy and HG and the way they just changed the Olympics.
Well, I love, sorry to interrupt you there, Brookie, but I think the part that struck me the most about this documentary and perhaps what you're tapping into is as an Indigenous Australian, just how powerful that moment was and what it now means. I'd love to go and ask children now what it meant to them to see a role model like that. It just was this perfect moment in time where it married politics and race and identity and in only the way sport can do, I think, and perhaps music, but sport definitely can give you all of that combined complexities. And I thought the documentary captured that, but I hated the way they showed the race. So that was where I was at the end of the day on this one.
Okay, so a gold medal performance by Kathy Freeman. Mm-hmm. Joe, are you giving the documentary a gold medal?
I'm giving the documentary a silver medal because of the way they portrayed the race, and I actually then replayed it on YouTube. Go and watch the race in its entirety. It does not need the stuff they put in.
Okay. Dan, what's your score?
It's a 4.5 from me.
Malk.
It's 4 big ass wombats.
I'm giving it a 4 as well. I do agree, Joe, that the innovation from the Bangarra Dance Company was overused.
I mean, it was beautiful, but not for that moment. Yep.
Not in that moment.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Point well made. Thank you all. Now, next week, something completely different. Dan, tell us what's going on.
We're really changing pace next week for Group Binge. So, I want everyone to tune in to the 72nd Primetime Emmy Awards.
Amazing.
Next Monday.
I love an Emmy.
Australian time, September 21, live from the States, with a replay in the evening, of course, for those who miss it. Check your guides for exact times, hosted by Jimmy Kimmel. Not only do I want to chat about how they handle the first ever virtual Emmy Awards ceremony, but I want to have a big debrief about who wins, whether we agree,
what
we're outraged missed out. It's been a huge year of incredible television, so many deserving winners. So I'm going to talk about all of that, all of the things, next week. Please watch
it.
Where do
we
special?
Find it? Where
it
do we
is
find
on
it?
Foxtel Arena next Monday, September 21.
It's our Emmys special.
Our Emmys special. So watch along at home. Share your thoughts with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Carrier Pigeon, whatever you like. We'll be unpacking it all in next week's podcast.
I guess I'm working from home that day.
You are. Yeah. call in sick. Team, it's nearly time to say farewell, but before we go, let's take a quick dip into...
Rewind.
Joe, what have you been revisiting?
That's me clapping. All right, so I'm going to make you guys guess this one.
Okay.
All right. First clue. I ended up here after Midnight Cowboy, okay?
Joe.
Golden Girls.
No. I had completely forgotten how obsessed I was with this series at the time, and I'm hoping one of you fellas was with me. Okay. It was during my HSC. I'm roughly the same age as you, Brookie.
Yeah.
End of the Northern 80s. Exposure. Early. No. And my sisters and I had the most fun ever zoning out daughters. With this show. No, it's American. Nash. You can catch it on Amazon Prime. It's the fictionalized account of the brave men and women of the Pony Express in America's Wild Wild West. Come on. It has future
know.
Legends.
You're on your own.
Wild Bill Hickok, I think his name was Hickok.
Hickok.
Played by a young Josh Brolin. Buffalo Bill, played by Stephen Baldwin. Brookie, don't let me down here. Featured Oscar winner Melissa Leo.
What?
Fast guns, fast horses, riding sequences that won two primetime Emmys.
Dr. Quinn Medicine.
No,
woman.
God, okay. The young, the young riders. Okay, none of you were into it.
I've never heard of it.
It was based on the back of Young Guns. It was similar, but not quite the film. You'd never watched this? The Baldwin brothers? Oh my God, it must have just been a hottie on horses thing. Maybe. Maybe that's why my sisters and I.
Goodness.
What channel was it on? Was it on 10?
It was on, oh goodness, you're taking me back, probably 7 at the time, I think. And it got interrupted for some war that came on. What was the war back in the 90s?
Oh my
the Gulf War.
Interrupted for some
and
war.
And I was filthy. It got ripped from the airwaves. But, oh my goodness, you can
if
catch
you
it on
right
Amazon
on that
Prime.
Gulf War peace protest, not because you're protesting
yes.
the war.
Yes, bring me back.
Young riders got took
bring
off.
Me back the Baldwins. For any girls out there who might remember, post on the Bingy Facebook page. Tell me I'm not alone.
No one. There'll be no one.
That's not true. I'm going to prove you wrong, Mol.
Yeah.
I'm going to prove you wrong.
Next week.
All right. Four stamps from Joe.
Okay. Well, anyway, Amazon Prime. You can catch it.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it just for you, Joe.
Thank you.
So I can have some
bet. You are so disgusting.
I'm not.
All right. Thank you very much, Joe. That is us for another week. Thanks to our BingeBox team, Mok, Joe and Brookie. Where can we find you on the social media platforms, Mok?
Mainly on the floor at Joe's response to us not loving young writers. Otherwise, I'm at Steve Mogg, friends. Make sure you comment 5-star, all the things. We love it when you do. Nobody has.
Oh.
Come on.
Yeah, we do need a comment. We're starved of
Listen
comments.
Listen to us. We're poor little
us. This is our pathetic plea for your love.
I mean, not that, not that we're counting, but I think the last one was June.
Oh.
Not that I've looked.
Where can we find you,
At joe.casamento on Instagram.
And Brookie?
I am at Viscount Brookie, but I'm also at the TV Binge Box Podcast Gang Facebook page, where we hope to see you there.
We do indeed. And I'm at Dan M. Bennett on Twitter and _ Dan M. Bennett on Instagram. Thanks to everyone for listening. We look forward to your company again next week for more TV Binge Box. Until then, we're out.